This is Rob Unspach, and welcome to eHeroes, the interview series for entrepreneurs. And today's eHero is Deborah Jason.
Yay! Hey, that's me!
Deborah is the author of Millionaire Marketing on a Shoestring Budget. So let's talk about that. How did that book come about?
Oh, well, where do I begin? Let's see. After 9/11 happened, a lot of my clients, by the way, I'm a copywriter. I've had my business since 1989 writing marketing content. And after 9/11, a lot of my clients started to call me and they were scared and frightened. And they said, I'm cutting back. I'm not doing any marketing. I don't know what the world's coming to. And I said to them, you know, this is when you need to stay out there. This is when you need to keep that top of mind awareness. And so you can do it, and you can do it without breaking the bank. So I started to give them advice and guidance on how to market themselves without spending a lot of money. So over the years, and that was many, you know, 9/11 was 2001. So time passes by, and probably in 2013, maybe 14, in 2006, I started to do this as a presentation. Several years after that, I mentioned the name of the presentation, Millionaire Marketing on a Shoestring Budget, and someone said, that sounds like a book. And since I was also pursuing a career as a professional speaker, many people said, you need a book. So I thought about it for a year. I actually talked with a colleague who ran a publishing company, and he said, yeah, let's do it. And a year went by. And finally, another year later, another colleague of mine approached me, and I finally committed to doing the book. So once I made that commitment, I sat down. I call it birthing a baby. You might know, Rob. You know, it took me about 9 months of writing, because even though I'd been doing it as a presentation, and I had information, when I looked at all the words, I'm like, this doesn't make a book yet. Mm-hmm. So it took some more time interviewing colleagues and getting feedback from them, and they're in my book. And that's how the book was born.
You know, a lot of people have come to me and they said, you know, Rob, you write the easiest books ever. And I say, well, it didn't always turn out that way. My very first conceptual book, I thought about taking all the blog articles I had ever written, and there was hundreds of them. And, you know, there's advice out there. People say, take your blog articles, make a book. And I looked through these blog articles, I printed them out, and there's stacks of paper. And I said, you know what? This is boring. I can't write this. So I trashed it all. I threw all the manuscript away. I said, you know what? I'm going to make this easy. I'm going to make this so that you can zip through it in under 45 minutes. And I'm going to give people the easiest social media book they've ever read. And I broke all the rules. I came out with Share in 2013. And, you know, that kind of put me on the map as the social media, you know, publishing expert. So it was kind of nice, but it was a surprise. And I had to force myself to change how I was doing things.
Well, you know, one of the chapters in my book is about change and how, you know, change can have many rewards. Mm-hmm. It's not always easy. You know, I've made changes in my life, and some of the changes have been about moving places. You know, I live in Colorado now, but I lived in Hawaii for 10 years. And then I came back to Colorado, and people go, well, that's not a big change. And I'm like, yeah, it is. Because life changes, you know, from 1 year to the next. And so, you know, a lot of great things come out of change. And I think because I moved, I don't know if I would have written this book if I was still living in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. It was because I came back to Colorado and reconnected with a colleague of mine. And maybe that would have happened from afar, but I don't know. So a lot of good things come from change, as scary and as frightening as it can be.
Yeah, you had mentioned that, you know, you started this crazy entrepreneurial life in 1989. What made you decide to become an entrepreneur?
Well, actually, it was kind of an accidental journey because, as I mentioned, I live in Colorado and I'm originally from New York. And back in 1987, I went back to New York And I love New York. It's a great place to grow up and visit, but living there was not the same. So I came back to Colorado and started to look for a J-O-B. And Colorado was actually in a recession then. It was 1988. So everywhere I went looking for a copyright job, agencies said, we're laying people off. We're not hiring, we're firing. However, they also said to me, if you were to start your own business as a freelancer, we could use your help. So a light bulb went off in my head. I always wanted my own business. I never knew what that was going to be. And I said, okay, I'm going to open my doors. I opened my doors as the Right Direction, W-R-I-T-E, on January 1st of 1989. So I just celebrated 29 years in business.
Wow, congrats.
Makes me feel old.
Yeah, in February, my wife and I remarried 29 years. So, that's kind of
awesome. Old. Well, good for you. So that's how I started my business. And, it shifts and it changes. Talking about change, they spent a lot of time building my own marketing tools, which is what I end up writing about in my book, is how did I get out there? How did I get exposure and gain top of mind awareness? Because I didn't go to college to be a copywriter. I got my master's degree in communication disorders. So I was a speech pathologist for several years and actually changed careers a few times between then and starting my writing business. So you never know what life is going to hand you and how you can take a lemon and turn it into lemonade.
Have you noticed that your degree has helped or hindered being an entrepreneur?
I'll take some words from my dad. So I have a Master of Arts degree, and like I said, it was in communication disorders. So I was a speech pathologist for several years, and when I quit that field, I felt really bad about it because I had spent 6 years going to college. But my dad said to me, your education is never wasted. And so I keep those words in my head, even though, so I'm still doing communication, and there are some people that don't have a disorder, so to speak, but need help in how to market their product because they can't get the words out of their head onto paper, or they know their product really well, but they're not sure how to do their messaging. So that's where I come in and I help them. So yeah, my master's degree has helped me in some shape or form, even though it wasn't in journalism or English literature or writing even. So an education I don't think is ever wasted.
No, and I think as an entrepreneur, we do tend to break the rules a little bit, a lot in my case. And I think that copywriting forces a lot of entrepreneurs to bend, to break, to modify, and to go on their own evolution of writing to fit their style.
Well, we were talking earlier before we got on this call about breaking the rules. And as a copywriter, it depends on your audience, because what we were chatting about was breaking the rules of writing. Mm-hmm. As a marketing writer, I might write a sentence that's one word, or I might write a sentence that's not even really a sentence. So, but it's marketing content. And so again, it goes back to the audience and who are you writing for. If you're writing for a highly educated market that's looking for everything to be perfect and grammar to be perfect, you've got to write to their needs and their wants. But when you're writing marketing content, in order to get your message across in a way, in a powerful way, in a big way, in a way that gets results, I believe it's really important to be conversational. Actually, when I speak about copywriting and marketing, I tell people, when you sit down to write, first thing you should do is imagine you're sitting at a table across from your ideal client. And imagine that person is telling you everything that's going wrong with their day, the challenges they're having, the issues. What motivates them to want to find a solution? So you listen really carefully to them, and you'll find good content for your copy. And then you and your content can offer the solution, something that makes their lives easier personally or professionally, so that when they're reading that content, they're going, yes, you understand me. Yes, that's me. Yes, I need to hit the buy now button or pick up the phone or send you an email. I need to do something. I need to take action because your message resonates with me.
You know, what are one or two of the easy things that people get out of your book that make their lives better or make their marketing better?
Well, probably the easiest thing they get out of my book are several cost-effective ways to market themselves. How can they get their message out there? And I offer various ways that they can do that. Some of them, most of them actually don't cost any money, but they take time. So, you know, there is something there. But the real general message is about sharing value and building relationships.
And I think, you know, it comes back to social media does a lot of that for entrepreneurs. They just don't understand that, you know, they have to strike up that conversation with somebody else in order to get them to trust them first. Same with marketing, or same with going to a chamber event, or, right, you know, any event. You know, if you're going to be a wallflower, you're not going to get asked to dance. You got to get out there and talk to people.
Well, we talk a lot about, I'm not sure if you're familiar, you probably are, with The Go-Giver, written by Bob Berg and John David Mann. And, you know, they talk about all things being equal, people do business with and refer business to people that they know, like, and trust. So I call that the KLT factor. And the KLT factor, there are many ways to develop that know, like, and trust. And it's not by reaching out on Facebook or LinkedIn and saying, you know, let's connect. And then as soon as that person connects with you, you go, hey, buy my stuff. It's really about let's connect. Let's get to know each other. You know, hey, I saw that you posted a question about ABC. Here's something you might find helpful. Those kinds of things start to build the know, like, and trust. And I love that you mentioned going to something like a chamber of commerce event, because a lot of people join something like a chamber of commerce. And this is in my book. You don't just join. Because if you pay your dues and just sit back and go, okay, I'm a member now, what are you going to do for me? You'll find that you probably don't get much out of it. But if you get involved, that's where you start to develop relationships. That's where you start to build the know, like, and trust. And getting involved could mean not just going to an event, but volunteering, being on a committee, chairing a committee, doing something, giving presentations for their members. Those kinds of things help you build credibility and increase your visibility, help you gain authority, and develop the know, like, and trust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, sometimes doing even free speaking engagements gets you the publicity that you need and the authority, the credibility behind you, so other people can know, like, and trust you to buy from you.
Well, that is a chapter that I talk about, is public speaking, you know, and so going to a chamber of commerce, going to a Rotary Club, going to a e-women's network or some kind of business group and speaking. You know, some people say, well, it's a free gig, I don't have time. But what you're doing is you're getting, I hate to say this, but you're getting exposure. You know, exposure doesn't pay the bills. But if you're sharing value, you know, if you're giving 5 tips on how to publish a book, and somebody in that audience is going, whoa, those are great tips, I need some help, then maybe they'll go up and they'll talk to you at the end and say, Rob, how can you help me? And I remember many years when I first started my business, I did go to the Chamber of Commerce and I did presentations about how to write marketing materials. And somebody came up to me at the end and said, I don't understand, why would you give this presentation telling us how to write our own materials when that's what you do for a living? how are you going to make any money if you're teaching us how to do it? And I said, well, there's two things. One is maybe you do have that skill hidden within you and you're going to go out and write it yourself and do a great job. And so I'm happy to pull that out of you. But the other thing, and most often what did happen, is people would say, okay, I've learned enough now to know that I can't do this, that I don't have the expertise. And so I'm going to call Deborah and get her help. Or even if they didn't call me and they called someone else, at least now they knew what to look for. And for as far as, you know, copywriting, what makes good copy. So, you know, never put it down and say, oh, well, you know, I'm giving all the information away. Because there's usually somebody or more than one somebody that says, I love what you shared. You are the expert in that field. I'm going to go to you so that you can help me because I'm an expert in something else. And I can't do what you do.
You know, the first time I was asked to speak, I didn't have a problem with it. Then it must have been the 15th time I got up and I had a coughing fit. I couldn't remember what I was supposed to talk about. I was standing behind a podium. I mean, everything, like the whole world collided in on me and it said, you know what, you're not going to talk today. And I apologized to the crowd. I took out my notes, which I just happened to have in my pocket. And I said, I don't know what's come over me, but I'm just going to read this to you because I don't know when I'm going to cough again. And I ended up getting like 12 clients out of that gig. And awesome. Really, I had failed big time on stage. But from that point on, I learned a lesson. Not to try to rehearse my script, not to try to have, you know, sales aids, you know, slides or presentations in back of me. I would go up and just tell a story, tell people who I was, what I could do, what they could experience. And from that point on, I just told stories. And, you know, I went to one event where I spoke for an hour and a half and I didn't have any notes, didn't have anything. And I was just comfortable. And, you know, people loved it.
So, yeah, well, people like when you're genuine with them. Yeah. You know, they like seeing people sort of letting their guard down, for lack of a better word, just because then they can relate. They're like, this person's being real mm-hmm. with me. And people relate to that because they want to see that you're only human. You know?
So, you know, speaking of human, how do all the listeners get a hold of you? I mean, how can they find you? Can they get you on Facebook? Can they get your website? I mean, you want to share any of that information?
Sure. Well, they can find me on Facebook. They can find me on Instagram, on Twitter, on Pinterest, on LinkedIn. So it's Deborah Jason, DebraJason. And if they're interested in my copywriting business, that's right. Direction.com spelled WRITE, rightdirection.com, all one word. If they're looking for an engaging speaker, my speaking website is DebraJason.com, DebraJason. And if they want an autographed copy of this book, they can go to MillionaireMarketingOnAShoestringBudget.com.
You know, I remember when URLs, you were supposed to have real short ones.
Sure was.
Nope.
Yeah, when I wrote my book, that was one of the things about writing the book. It's like, well, that's a pretty long URL. But, you know, it's Millionaire Marketing on a Shoestring Budget, and I want the people to remember that. They can also go to Amazon and Barnes & Noble, but the autographed copy, and actually it comes with a gold shoestring. I'm looking. I don't have one in front of me. But when you order it from me, it comes with a gold shoestring as well.
Wow, that's a bonus because my books don't come with anything but my signature if you buy it from there. So, I mean, what when you came up with the concept of the book, I mean, is that something that you had an idea in your mind about the cover, or did you go out and have it designed that way?
I hired a designer. Yeah, I had no idea. Actually, it's an interesting story because when I was writing the book, I had writer's block. And one day I was talking to my coach and he said, okay, so take a break. go online and look for pictures for what you think the cover of your book might look like. Well, I started to do that, and that was overwhelming because, you know, there's a million pictures, a zillion pictures out there. I'm like, this is not relaxing me. So I actually talked with probably three different designers, all who I knew personally. One of them sent me a mock-up, and I was like, no, that doesn't do it. Another one was actually an accountability partner of mine. We'd been having weekly calls, so she'd been going through the whole book process with me. And she said, hey, why don't I design your cover? And so she came up with several designs and sent them to me. And I was looking through them and telling her all the things that were wrong with the ones that I didn't like. And she's like, okay, is there anything that you do like? And one of them was this gold shoestring. And I said, yeah. She goes, yes, because that was the one she liked the most. It was simple. It conveyed the story. And so that's how the design came about. So I didn't have any idea in my mind what it was going to look like when I first started writing it. But she found this gold shoestring, and it was perfect.
Yeah, I noticed it's not too busy either. And I try to tell all the authors that are designing books not to make your book covers too busy. You can put, you know, one or two images on there, have your copy, but if you have it loaded with images, it's going to distract people and they're going to go to some other book.
Right. Yeah, you want it to be easy to, what I say is easy on the reader's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So if they look at it, you know, they see the message of what is this book about. And I don't know, I'd be interesting to ask you a question. You know, some people like to put their faces on the cover of the book. And my feeling about that is usually, well, unless you're a celebrity, I wouldn't do it, but I'm curious what your thought is on that.
You know, I'd put my face on the back cover. It's on the back cover of a few books. Some of the books that I've co-authored with others, my face isn't there. And it doesn't matter, because if they really want to see me, they can find me on social media. They can see me on my website. But a face on the cover doesn't really build trust. They're looking for the quick title. They're looking for the picture. You know, if your book is all about makeup, maybe put your face on there. But if it's, my last couple books, one was about copywriting. So I did put, there was a design about a quill and an ink. And then one was about social media. So I had a few icons, and one was about podcasting. So basically just the microphone,
mm-hmm.
You know, kept it simple.
Yeah.
And I think if you have a simple picture with a great title, you're going to do better than putting your picture on it.
Well, yeah. Thanks for sharing your point of view, because I'm in agreement. But, you know, like I said, I have colleagues that write books and they put their pictures on the front cover, you know, like the book is about me. And it's like, well, okay. But I agree about putting it on the back cover or in the inside. But, you know, what is your book about? Show them a picture of that.
Yeah. And you know, the book that I wrote for the boomers, it's called No Experience Necessary, Social Media for the Boomers, Gen Xers, and Over 50 Entrepreneurs. I'm not 50. I can't read it. I'll be 50 in another year and a half. But I wrote it, I co-authored it with Lori Ratzlaff, who is over 50. But the whole book was geared to the older entrepreneur. And basically we talked about, you know, their legacy. You know, how do they want to get that legacy out and perceived by others? You know, and so they're using social media to push their story, to get more people interested in their legacy. And, you know, had we put our own pictures on the front cover, I don't think it would have sold well.
Interesting. Yeah, well, that's another thing you can do is test it, you know. And yeah. I actually did put two of my covers up on Facebook once. And actually, it was really a cool thing to do. And I talk about this sometimes with people about promoting your books, is you don't have to wait till your book is published to start promoting it. And so, for example, when I put up the two covers, I'm like, I can't decide between this and this. I got, I don't know, hundreds of people responding. And as it turned out, the cover stayed similar, but I didn't choose either one of those designs. It still had the gold shoestring, but the typeface was different. But it helped build community, because then people started coming to me and go, what did you decide? Show me the cover now. So that when I launched the book, there was some excitement around it as well. The whole process can be quite a mind game, because you want something that people are going to relate to, but you also have your own likes and dislikes. But you got to go with your gut and say, okay, this is what I want, and this is how I'm going to go about it. Because everyone has an opinion.
and the thing is that had I put my book covers up on social prior to the book coming out, I might have had 100 different opinions on where the cover should be. I went with my gut. I said, this is what I like. This is what I don't like. This is how it's going to be. And, people bought it anyway. So, if they like you, they like the content, they like what you're pushing, not pushing, but
sharing.
Sharing. They're going to gravitate towards you. And if they're already in your tribe, if they're already following you, if they already have a reason to believe in you, they're going to continue to buy from you.
Yes. If you've got what they're looking for, they'll check it out.
So we are running out of time, but can you share one thing with the audience that you think that's important to them right now in their business? One little tip.
I think the most important thing, especially with all the technology we have today, I love social media. I'm a big fan of it, but I think it's really important. We touched on this briefly, is to keep that human connection. And so I tell people, don't forget that on the other side of that phone, I don't have one in front of me, but on the other side of that phone or on social media, there's a person. So reach out. Talk to people, send a handwritten note. It's not always about texting. It's not always about email or social media. Some of the best experiences I had are meeting people on social media and then connecting with them. And it could be like today's call, connecting on a Zoom call or a Skype call. But that helps you nurture and build those relationships that we were talking about earlier. And so to me, marketing your business is all about building and nurturing relationships. So remember that when you're doing your own business.
And there you go, folks. This is why Deborah Jason is an entrepreneurial hero, an e-hero. So go to her website, deborahjason.com, or Millionaire
Marketing on a Shoestring Budget.com or WriteDirection.com.
There you go. Thanks for listening. This is Rob Ansbach. You can visit me at AnsbachMedia.com and check out future eHero interviews. Adios.